Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a bit of shortcut, actually, into the world of financial reporting standards. You know, the rules that dictate how companies, well, present their financial health to you. Okay, let's try and unpack this a bit. Our mission is simple. Cut through the jargon. Find the key bits. Maybe some surprising facts from these standards. Give you a clearer picture of what's really going on behind the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. These standards, they're kind of the bedrock, aren't they, for transparent financial communication. They often reveal quite a lot about a company's, you know, real operational health. We'll be diving into IAS 2 for inventories, then IAS 10 for events after the reporting period, and IAS 38 for those intangible assets.
Right. Let's start with something you can actually touch. Inventories. Stock. Seems simple, doesn't it? Just count what you've got. Mm-hmm. But I've heard valuing it isn't always straightforward. What's the big deal here?
Well, the big deal, and maybe the misconception, is thinking it's just about what you paid. IAS 2, it actually states, inventories must be valued at the lower figure, either their original cost or their net realizable value.
Net realizable value. So what you can realistically sell it for, minus costs.
Pretty much, yeah. What you'd expect to get in the market, less any costs to finish it or sell it, it's crucial. It stops companies from, you know, overstating their assets if maybe the market price is dropped. Forces realism.
Okay, and here's where it gets really interesting, I think. What actually counts as cost? Because it's not just the purchase price, is it?
No, not at all. It's much broader. It includes the purchase price, sure, but also import duties, transport, handling costs, also direct production costs. Think direct labor, direct expenses, maybe subcontracted work, and even a slice of production overheads, but based on sort of normal activity levels.
So the direct costs of making it and getting it there. But what gets left out, that seems just as important.
Oh, definitely. What's excluded tells you a lot. Things like abnormal amounts of waste material, labor, overheads, gone. Doesn't count. Storage costs are usually out too, unless they're a necessary part of the production process before a further stage. And general admin overheads, nope. Selling costs, definitely not part of inventory cost.
I see. So it really highlights efficiency, doesn't it? If you're wasteful, you can't hide it in your asset value.
Exactly. And for tracking those costs, companies generally use one of two methods, either FIFO, first in, first out.
Oldest stuff sold first.
Right. Or AVCO, the weighted average cost method. Averages everything out. Unless, of course, you can track specific individual items, which is less common for large inventories.
Okay, inventories pinned down. Let's shift gears. What about timing? Like stuff that happens after the company's year end, but before they actually publish the reports. That seems like a tricky area.
It really can be. That's where IAS 10 comes in. It deals with events after the reporting period. That's the specific window between the balance sheet date, the year end, and the date the financial statements are actually authorized for issue.
Okay, so what happens in that window matters.
It does. And there are two critical types of events. First, you have adjusting events. Now, these provide evidence of conditions that already existed at the reporting date.
Already existed. So, like a problem that was brewing but only became clear after year end.
Precisely. Like maybe a major customer goes bankrupt just after the year end.
Yeah.
But if evidence shows they were already in financial difficulty before the year end.
Ah, then you have to adjust the year end account.
Yes. You have to adjust the figures, reflect that reality as if it were known at the year end date. It increases accuracy.
Okay, makes sense. What's the other type?
The other type is non-adjusting events. These indicate conditions that arose after the reporting period, brand new situations.
Like that factory fire example you mentioned earlier, happening after year end.
Exactly. A fire, a major restructuring announced after the date, a big acquisition or disposal. For these, you don't adjust the main financial statement numbers. But, and this is important, if the event is material, if it's significant, you must disclose its nature and, if possible, estimate the financial effect in the notes to the accounts.
So no change to the past numbers, but a heads up about the future impact.
That's it. Transparency about new significant events.
Right. It really boils down to, was the root cause there before year end or did it happen entirely afterwards? Crucial distinction. Okay, from physical goods and timing, let's go to things you can't even touch. Intangible assets. How on earth do you value something like goodwill or a brand or software reliably?
Well, IAS 38 tackles this. It defines an intangible asset as an identifiable non-monetary asset without physical substance. And there are strict criteria for putting one on the balance sheet initially. It needs to be identifiable, meaning you could potentially sell it separately. You need to control it usually through legal rights like a patent or license. It must be probable that it will generate future economic benefits like revenue or cost savings. And critically, its costs must be measurable reliably.
Identifiable, controlled, brings future benefits, costs known.
Okay. But what's fascinating, like you said, is what often doesn't make the cut here.
Yeah, this is key. Internally generated goodwill. You can't recognize that as an asset. It might exist, but its cost can't be reliably measured separately from the business itself. Same often goes for internally generated brands, mastheads, publishing titles, customer lists.
Really? Even if they're incredibly valuable? Yes. Because reliably measuring the cost to create them internally, separate from the day-to-day running costs, is usually impossible according to the standard. So the costs incurred in building them internally just get treated as expenses when they happen, charge, profit, or loss. And research costs, too, the early stage stuff, always expensed. Too much uncertainty.
Okay, so research is always an expense. But development?
Development is different. Costs in the development phase, taking research findings and turning them into a plan or design for something new or improved, can be capitalized as an intangible asset, but only if you meet another set of quite strict criteria. Things like technical feasibility, intent to complete and use or sell it, ability to use or sell it, how it will generate future benefits, availability of resources to finish it, and ability to measure the development cost reliably.
Wow, okay. Much higher bar for development than research. It needs to be pretty concrete.
Exactly. It's about demonstrating a much clearer path to future economic benefits. And once you have an intangible asset, it's usually amortized spread over its useful life, like depreciation for tangible assets.
Rah.
Unless its useful life is assessed as indefinite.
No end in sight. Yeah. Like some brands acquired in a takeover.
Potentially, yes. In that case, no amortization. But you then have to test it for impairment check if its value has dropped at least every year.
Okay, phew. We've covered a lot. Inventories, timing, intangibles. So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you listening in?
Well, I think it shows these standards aren't just, you know, dry accounting rules. They're the language companies use to communicate their financial reality. Understanding the basics helps you interpret that language correctly. Okay. We've seen how specific rules provide clarity, whether it's valuing stock, handling events after year end, or recognizing invisible assets. It paints a picture.
It really does. It gives you a framework to look past the headlines and assess a company's true standing. So here's a thought to leave you with. How does knowing what is allowed to be called an asset or a liability, and crucially, when it gets recognized, how might that change your perception of a company's strength or perhaps its vulnerability when you look at its financials next time? Something to mull over. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.